The Church Media Podcast, episode 136. Fire up your creative team with Andrew Johnston, part 3. Let's do it.
Hey there. Welcome to the Church Media Podcast,
the definitive podcast for helping you create dynamic experiences and build solid media production teams at your church.
We're bringing you knowledge and insight from top media professionals from around the world.
Useful, practical content in the areas of live production, design, leadership, digital communications, and more.
The show notes for this episode and all archive episodes of the show are available online now at the Church Media Podcast.com. And now, broadcasting from the ministry headquarters of 1230 Media, here's your host, Church Media Coach Carl Barnhill.
Hello and welcome to the Church Media Podcast. So glad you're checking us out. I hope you guys survived Easter this past Sunday. I'm sure many of you are taking some time off this week to get some rest. I sure hope so. I want you to know this. I know that your job as a church media leader is thankless. I know that the only time people know you're there is when something goes wrong. I know the long hours you put in to make things happen at your church. And if you don't hear it from anyone but me, thank you. Thank you for your hard work. Thank you for your heart to serve. Thank you for putting in the time that no one sees to create experiences at your church that God uses to change lives. This week, we're going to wrap up our 3-part series with author, speaker, coach, Dr. Andrew Johnston, about firing up your creative team. If you missed the last 2 episodes of the podcast, I give you permission right now to stop this episode and go catch up. Andrew has shared some fantastic thoughts on how to kindle the spark in your creative team. The final piece of my interview with Andrew is on the way. After a grueling Easter season, sometimes you wonder if it's worth it in ministry. On this week's Church Media Tip, I give you 5 things to remember when ministry gets tough. Check this out.
And now, your Church Media Tip of the Week. Useful tips and tricks to help you transform the worship experiences at your church. Here's Carl Barnhill.
Ministry is hard. It just is. Whether you're on staff or a volunteer, the spiritual element of leading people is very real. The devil hates that you're creating experiences where life change happens. He is after you. I'm going to give you 5 ways real quick to stay focused when ministry gets tough. Number 1, schedule intentional time with Jesus. Time is usually the reason for me that this is the first thing I can skip every day. Let's not let intentional time with Jesus fall off our list, me included. Number 2, no spiritual attacks are going to come from places that you least expect. They will hit your marriage, your family, the team member you least expect. Be ready for it. Number 3, communicate with the people closest to you. Prepare your spouse and family for spiritual attacks. Communicate your calendar. When you head into Easter, Christmas, or busy seasons, communicate well. Number 4, be humble. Don't always think that you have to be on the mountain with God to minister to others. Sometimes people feel cared for if they know that you've been there. People respect and trust humility over arrogance any day. It's okay to not have all the answers. Number 5, consistently remind yourself that your relationship with God and your family matters more than your ministry. Now, I'm not saying don't dedicate yourself to your ministry, but learn to say no more when it comes to your personal walk with Jesus and your family. I hope and pray these quick reminders will encourage you today as you serve your family, your church, and your team.
Get more free coaching for your production team through our blog, podcast, and online resource library. Visit 1230.media/training today. This is an exclusive interview from the Ministry of 1230 Media. Here is Church Media Coach Carl Barnhill.
All right, so in our remaining minutes, let's deal with the last portion of your triangle. Let's talk about heat. Okay. So you say leadership isn't just about inspiring people with goals, but it's about motivating people to reach them. So how do we motivate? How do we light a fire under our team?
Yeah, that's a good point. And you know, the reason why I put that in the book is because, I don't know, a lot of the leaders out there that we see in any area, but particularly the church world, are often really good talkers. And they talk a lot about vision and casting a vision. And I don't know, that's just a really hip thing.
Yeah.
And so I interact with leaders that are striving to be a great leader of their team, but they're putting all their energy into being this really compelling public speaker. And ultimately, it's not just your ability to cast the compelling vision that distinguishes an effective leader. It's the ability then to enable a team to achieve it. And that's the hard stuff. And so I'm trying to drive people at that and saying, look, if you're going to motivate people, first of all, I mentioned earlier that we're creatures of conviction. And by that, I mean that we run on our sense of purpose. So if you're going to move your team in any way, you've got to be able to cast a compelling vision, to talk about a purpose. Because if somebody doesn't know why they're doing something, and in particular, if they don't have a why that is worthy of all the things you're about to ask of them, then all your other efforts to motivate are going to be way at the extrinsic end. You know, if we're talking carrots and sticks, you're going to find yourself having to use the stick too often. And so motivation all starts with this sense of purpose and the ability to pump up the worth, I guess I would say, of what's happening. Sometimes one of the ways I put it is, look, don't start with all the details of what you want them to do, even though that's what you're motivating them about, because people don't commit to plans. They commit to causes.
Right.
And so you want to somehow pitch this in a way that helps them understand that. And then the second piece I'd say is, whenever you're motivating, it's really about the linkage to that. That's the source of motivation. So when you're talking about individual tasks, I mean, let's face it, the opportunity to design another slide for Sunday morning or some incidental graphic isn't in and of itself going to fire somebody up. So what you need to do is spend your time linking that to the laudable and worthy purpose, because that's worth firing someone up.
That's, you know,
this isn't a creative example, but I was working with a group at Bridgestone recently, and I was walking through their factory. It was a place where a worker was moving raw rubber from one bin to another place, and it was part of what would eventually become a tire. And I kind of looked at that and thought, this is my idea of one room in hell, you know, that this is just going to go on and on and on. And he didn't seem like that at all, and I asked him about it, and he said, no, I'm just creating some really great family relationships. I thought that was the strangest answer, because he's doing this out of rubber. And he went on to tell me a story of how when he was young, his family would go on trips. And this was way back in the day. So he and his little brother would lie in the back window of the car. And he has these great memories of how they would go on these trips and lie back there and tell stories and all this and have this great family time and family relationship. And that's what he was thinking of. He wasn't thinking of the details of the task. He was thinking, this is instrumental to making the tires that will drive the cars, that will give families time to be together and develop this great relationship and have the same great memories I do.
Exactly.
And so that transformed the whole experience. And I mean, he was super motivated, but if you're a leader, you can't take for granted that people see the line from what they're doing to what they're accomplishing. And so your job is to, first of all, identify something they're accomplishing that's genuinely compelling, and then second of all, to always be drawn that line.
So I talk about this idea a lot also, and one thing that we've done on Sundays, or I've done and seen done, is to take your production team to the place where response happens. So in some churches, you know, you don't come to the front of the service. You might go to a care room or response room or something like that. So if that's the case, then, and it was in one church that I worked at, so I would actually take them and stand at the door or look, and not awkwardly, but, you know, stand around and see if there was a big crowd there and actually show them, or actually talk with someone later and have them explain to the production team why they responded, if they were willing to do so. And that would connect the why.
Oh, yeah.
Because of what you're doing, hitting slides, changing lyrics. Hearts are being changed and marriages are being restored and relationships are being, I mean, this is why you're doing it. It's not pushing the space bar. That's not what you're doing. Really?
That's great, Carl. You know, yeah.
Things like that.
Well, and I'd go a step farther to say you're doing something powerful there because, you know, a lot of leaders never make that connection. And then plenty of other leaders talk about that connection. But at a point, that kind of starts ringing hollow, you know, when
right.
you've had to do this for a long time. And you're,
right. It's
you know,
not this, tangible.
I've done so many of these slides. I think the real power of that is to try to take a step even closer to that and don't have it be your voice. Have it be
correct.
The people that are affected by it or go to the place where it's occurring and I'll really get down to it. So rather than you just sort of telling them, trust me, this is accomplishing great things, somehow find ways to connect them personally with what it's accomplishing because, you know, people are spending a lot of time and energy. They're leveraging their relationships and everything to accomplish these things. So it's not a strange thing for us to need to help invest in why it's worthy of all of that.
Correct. Man, gold, baby. This is so good. Okay, a couple more quick questions, then we'll wrap up. So let's talk about scary goals. How and why should we set big, scary goals for our team?
Yeah, I use that term because, honestly, I was at a conference one time, and we were talking about this concept of flow. A lot of people have heard that maybe more in the language of saying, you know, when people get in the zone.
Yeah.
It's this unusual moment where of hyper focus, where we kind of lose track of everything else because we're completely absorbed in what we're doing, and it enables us to do extraordinary things with very little stress and all. So I'm hearing about this and I'm thinking, yeah, I really want to help my team experience this. What do I do as a leader? And interestingly enough, flow is produced in a combination of the amount of competency you have relative to the amount of challenge you're facing. And at first, I thought it would be simple. You know, we'll just take some things off the to-do list, make it less challenging, and they'll have a lot more energy and enthusiasm. But that's not really what the science behind flow says. In reality, flow happens when you have high competency and you're facing a high challenge. So you're right there at the frontier of your ability, facing a challenge that's consuming and worthy of that. And so as I thought about this, I honestly kind of audited my team, and I had a pretty talented team. So their competency was really high. And I came to this really disturbing conclusion that if I really wanted to get them in flow, I had to turn up the challenge. And that was counterintuitive for me because people were already suffering under the load that they were facing it on. It seemed crazy that I'm going to go back and turn up the challenge. But honestly, we were kind of suffering in the worst territory where we were really, really busy, but we just hadn't quite broken through into flow. And so this was taking the greatest toll. So I went back thinking, okay, I need to up the challenge so that we've got something worthy of our high competency. And I asked the leaders in my organization, the managers, as they prepared their plans for the next year, to, you know, really shoot high and come up with some challenging things. And they came back, and when I read their goals, you know, honestly, I was underwhelmed. And I get that because they're like, well, you know, we don't want to shoot that high. We're already tired. We got a lot going on. We don't want to be crazy and stretch ourselves too far. But honestly, I sent the goals back to them with the instructions. I want these to be scarier. Mm. And the reason I picked that term is if you want people to get into flow and have that kind of challenge, then they have to be trying to accomplish something that provokes an emotion. And it's not fear per se, but it's a little scary. Like, I'm doing something that's so important, I'm a little worried about whether or not I can pull it off. Not just, oh, it's another thing on my to-do list. Or, this is extraordinary, I'm really excited about it, but it's a little scary because I've shot so high. So that's the term that I used for it. And they came back then, I would ask them, so how do you feel about this? And I'd listen to see, and if they weren't a little nervous and a little scared, if they were too confident they were going to pull it off, honestly, I asked him to raise it. And eventually when they came back, we had some scary goals. And by that, I mean we had goals that were in the territory that were compelling because they provoked an emotional response. People had to care about it. And boy, that transformed our team.
That's good, man, because I think it does take that in order to motivate sometimes. You know, if the bar is low, it's like, yeah, I can come in and do that. No big deal. It doesn't fire people up. It doesn't challenge them or motivate them to go further. Especially
yeah,
in church
it's
world.
It's kind of counterintuitive, isn't it?
Yeah. But
yeah. If you don't keep the challenge up, it's not that people won't achieve it. It's just they won't be fired up about it.
Exactly. Okay. So let me hit you with one more topic, and that is the topic of critiquing. You talk about this in your book, and one line I loved is you said, if you spend most of your time motivating or critiquing your team, there's a good chance your problem is a lack of clear direction.
Yeah.
I thought that was so good. Flesh that out for me.
Well, I guess maybe the best way to do that is to not first talk about what clear direction is, but talk about a couple near misses that I see regularly. I see leaders doing these two things, and it's not quite clear direction. The first one of those is they go about motivating people, and motivation is about spurring action, right? So the example I use is like if somebody tossed a grenade in the room at your next team meeting, the chances are you would see a response, right?
Yeah.
You'd see a sudden increase in activity, and people would immediately jump into motion. But that motion would be in every direction, just as long as it was away from the grenade. And that's not what we're looking for. When you provide clear direction, it has a way of producing activity, but coordinated activity in a common direction. So a lot of leaders are busy motivating, but that's not clear direction. Some folks spend a lot of time critiquing, and that's not about spurring activity. That's about correcting activity. Sometimes I call it bumper car leadership, because I don't know if you've ever experienced this, but I certainly have, that, you know, a leader will ask me to accomplish something, and I'll kind of go work on it. And when I come back and show it to them, they start trying to kind of critique it into something else. Something that they wanted all along, but they never actually told me.
Right.
And, you know, I get frustrated with that like anybody. I think, well, if you'd have told me this up front, I'd have done that. So instead of kind of trying to bump me into the right position, why don't you just tell me up front? And so that's why I say that if you're engaging and motivating and critiquing all the time, the chances are your real problem is that up front you haven't given clear enough direction for people to pursue it effectively, and now you're trying to kind of make up for that. So I encourage leaders to double down on the clear direction you give up front, and I kind of break that down into a variety of pieces of what you can give them that help them stay on track.
What if my pastor or my leader doesn't realize that they are critiquing and motivating me more than they are giving me clear vision or direction?
You mean this is an entirely hypothetical question, right?
Entirely. I'm just saying, what if, you know, not that it would ever happen, especially in church world. I mean, but just if it
did,
you know.
Well, so what are you looking to do, though? Are you trying to get that sort of communicated to them?
Yeah, so I guess what I'm after is, how do I respectfully, and maybe I've tried to ask for the why more, or I've tried to say, what is your clear vision or direction on this? And let's say I have to do that over and over, and I'm still getting critiqued or, you know, hammered. Is there a respectful way that I can approach my pastor or leader to say, hey, in order to be more successful, this is the kind of, I need you to, just like you were saying, instead of bumping me later, can you give me clear direction? And here's what I need in order to be successful. Is there a respectful way to approach my leader to ask for that?
Sure, sure. Well, I'd say there's a couple of those. Let me at least identify, when I talk about clear direction, let me mention the three parts of that, because you may need clear direction, but you may not need all of these. Maybe one in particular is sort of missing and tripping you or your team up. So, and it's easy to remember because I make them all begin with P, but the first one is purpose. already talked about the importance of that, but understanding the why behind things, because if part of the problem is that, you know, the leaders told you a lot of what they expect you to do, but they haven't spent much time talking about why or what you need to accomplish through this. They haven't prepared you to make choices down the road. Like, if they didn't anticipate the choice and tell you ahead of time, then when you get to that, you don't have any way of knowing that you're making the choices that they would prefer. So they prepare you to kind of freelance like that when they give you more information on the purpose for this. So that may be something specific that you need to go back and ask. And you, sometimes I think it's respectful to say, hey, here's, in this last couple of projects, I've noticed that you've had to offer me some suggestions and ask me to redo some things and all, and I've been trying to figure out how I can serve you even better. And I think this is where I'm coming down. I need to know a little more about what we're accomplishing so that I'm prepared to make choices en route.
Good.
That's the purpose end of it. The second part of that, I call it the particulars. The particulars are the things that sort of everybody thinks of in terms of clear direction. This is the, you know, what by when. You know, tell me specifically what the deliverable looks like. And let me encourage you, all the leaders out there, don't be shy of asking questions when you're given an assignment. Because when someone's asking for something and they just say, hey, give me something great. Give me, like, one of my pet peeves is the word excellent. We want excellence. You know, that's a really inspirational but not informational word, because I don't know what you mean by that.
Right.
So if somebody asks that, try to operationalize that. Ask them some questions or say, well, does it look like this? Doesn't it look like this? Because sometimes we just sort of accept that statement and go walking off to our own detriment because we don't have the particulars. I break that down into the what, by, when, the sort of givens and no-goes, the things that have to be included or shouldn't be included, that sort of stuff. And if you don't know that when you're walking away, you're not prepared to deliver in the end and might need to have to step up and ask for some of those. But then the last part of that clear direction that I talk about is priorities. And this is probably where I see it go awry most often. Often leaders know what's important, but they don't know how to order those important things relative to one another. And in practice, many of our priorities actually collide, and we're in tough situations that we make choices that might not please the person that we're serving. So, for instance, if you're going to be out there, I'm just going to use a real global one that often happens. Let's say at some point quality and the value of that, the priority on quality, is going to collide with the value and priority on cost, right? Well, do you want it great or do you want it cheap? Now, I mean, I'm making this overly simplistic, but that's where people get in trouble, because you have to make a choice as a leader in that. And if you don't know what your leader, your supervisor, wants you to do in that situation, you're taking a big risk. So I encourage people when they're kind of getting down to the clear direction is to ask the kind of questions that says, hey, help me understand the relative priorities so that I can make the tough choices on your behalf. And that's often a deeper conversation. To be honest, that's often something, when you ask those questions, you're going to find out that one of the reasons this is hard is that your leader, your boss, doesn't really know what he or she is asking for either.
That's what I was going to ask you next, is it kind of holds your, in a way, it holds your leader's feet to the fire. Because they now have to, I mean, just as you said, but we'll just make it excellent. Well, vague and not measurable. So I need to measure this somehow, and I need you to give me specifics on what do you want to accomplish through what you're asking me to do. Because being excellent is not necessary. I mean, that can mean different things to different people.
Yeah. Well, and part of the problem is usually you're interacting with somebody who's not a creative. And so they sort of know what they want to feel like and what they want to accomplish. And you need to be the instrument of helping them get deeper in that. They're not used to taking this ethereal thing like an idea and bringing it into some specifics. One of my favorite images, I think, of creativity is a Shakespearean quote where he says, our goal is to give the airy abstraction a local habitation and a name. And that's what we do as creatives. We take this idea, this notion, and we incarnate it. We bring it into the world in specifics. And so part of your role is to help someone who's not a creative think about those things, because that's not their territory. You can ask those sorts of questions. And, you know, sometimes that means that you've got to push a little on that, or you have to help them understand that because they don't have the kind of skills and ideas and repertoire that you do, they think they're being much more specific than they really are.
Right.
But you can think of 100 ways to accomplish this, and you might need to tell them, hey, I need a little hope here because I can deliver this in a number of different ways. Which of these is appealing to you?
That's
one
good.
Of the things that I encourage leaders and creative teams to do is, first of all, ask questions up front when they receive an assignment. Second of all, don't wait until it's delivered to find out if it was good enough. You know, go back in the middle and say, hey, here's what we're doing. Now, this is kind of scary because a lot of people, if you're not getting clear direction, sometimes the way you manage that is you try to have as little interaction with your boss as mm-hmm. possible, or as little opportunity for critique as possible. I totally understand that, but you're suckering yourself because sometimes if you go back and you say, okay, I've got these three great ideas of how to accomplish this. Tell me what you like or don't like about these. That often gives them the sort of repertoire they need to communicate what they should have communicated initially.
Good.
And then you can serve your team better by saying, okay, everybody, I've got confidence that you can give the good stuff to this route.
Yeah, and if you need to start over, you can start over at point B as opposed to waiting until point D when you're done.
right.
Yeah.
So yeah, because so often you don't end up knowing that you were off track until it's too late to fix it.
Right.
And now you've got a lot of ancillary damage to deal with.
Correct. Well, man, this is so rich. I don't even know how to wrap us up. So help me wrap us up. Like, why did you write the book again? And what do you want people to take away from the book to their teams?
You know, I guess I would just say this, that unfortunately, the way most organizations work tries to create environments and experiences and interactions that are very controllable, that are neat and tidy, they're predictable, and all. And most of these sorts of dispositions are harmful to living out the best opportunity for a creative team. So I wrote this book specifically for leaders of creative teams to say, look, here are some of the things you need to prioritize, some of the, I guess, counterintuitive approaches to leading the team collectively and the individuals on that team to really fire them up. Because I'm convinced that, you know, if we're made in the image of God, I'm convinced that creativity may be that the greatest legacy of that, the ability to create. And I think that it's a great responsibility, but also just a huge privilege for leaders of creatives to play a part in unleashing that. Because I think that means that they're really close to the center of what God wants and getting to kind of help people use the good gifts he's given them. So the book's written to help them do that through those three areas, to kind of put wind in their sails so that they're not tangled up and held down by organizational devices and issues like that. It helps them kind of fuel them so that they don't burn up or burn out. And finally, it helps them turn up the heat in ways that doesn't damage people or make them feel burned. Instead, it just makes it feel like they're doing something worthy and moves them upward and onward. So I hope the book serves people not just to equip them, but to encourage them, because I see that as a just a great role and something I'd like to help pursue.
So give us the first two steps. Obviously, the first one is pick up the book, and we'll give the information for that. In fact, can we get it at saltu.tv, or where do we go to get the book?
Probably the best place to do it is to go to drandrewjohnston.com.
Okay.
There, there's a book page there that'll give you information about the book, a number of different ways you can get it, but the main way, it will take you to the SALT community and that connection. Also, you know, I'd encourage you to go to drandrewjohnston.com and just on the connect page, take a second to give me your email and who you are, connect with me. I do a lot of coaching, a lot of work with specific teams and specific leaders where I get to walk with them, and if that's of service to you. I'd enjoy hearing about it or perhaps starting a relationship with you. But even if that's not of use to you right now, if you want to connect to me that way, it gives me a chance to share resources that we're preparing now, both on this book and for other aspects of being a more effective leader. So I'd send you to that direction, drandrewjohnston.com.
So once I pick up the book, what's the first step that I need to take? Obviously read it, but is it going to be, like, for me, it was just so rich and overwhelming a little bit. So where, give me a first step. How do I start with it?
Well, I think I might start thinking about fuel. If you're dealing with a team and you kind of want to take stock of how they're doing and what you can do, it may be best to dive into fuel, because obviously if you think you're just going to start turning up the heat but there isn't fuel, people are going to burn out real quickly. So
right. That's
going to steer you specifically towards talking about the worth of this and the purpose and all that's going to get your team started. You can kind of move on to oxygen and those sorts of things beyond that. The only other thing I'd say is I've heard from a lot of leaders in this, and what you were mentioning, there are two chapters on margin in the oxygen session, and boy, I am just hearing a lot from leaders that resonates with them, because that's where they are personally, where most of this book was written specifically towards preparing leaders to unleash the fire in their team. The margin chapters there, particularly the second one, was targeting how to help leaders survive this sort of overwhelming onslaught that they feel and how to deal with that. So I might say to flip to that chapter quickly if you're feeling like you're overwhelmed right now and you need a sort of a shot in the arm or some wind in your own sails, I might suggest that you start there.
Yeah, man, we deal with that all the time with our ministry. That's one of the main things that we hear. And in fact, that's one reason why we exist, is we create content, media content for churches, because their team is just so, either there's not enough staff, or the staff that they do have is just completely tapped out. On the verge of frying to a crisp. And so, you know, if we can come alongside, if guys like you can come alongside and help them, you know, I think it might, you know, give them a little bit of margin, also to implement some of the strategies that you're talking about. So, thank you so much for your time. You know, we've spread this content over the last couple of weeks, 2 or 3 weeks. So it's just been such a rich time with you, man. So thank you so much for being here and for, you know, sharing about the book and all your knowledge and experience with us.
Oh, you're absolutely welcome. It's been my pleasure. I've enjoyed it.
This has been an all-access interview from 1230 Media. For more interviews, training, and exclusive content for your production team, visit 1230.media/training.
Hey, this is Jay from tvapp.church, and we know the future of media is stressful. So many platforms and always evolving. Your ministry can be tech savvy without breaking the bank. We can help navigate these tech waters by getting you apps on Apple TV, Amazon Fire TV, Roku, and even a skill on Amazon Alexa. Sign up with us and your ministry can keep creating great content every week, and we will make sure you're on the right platforms. No contracts or setup fees, with monthly plans starting at $100. Mention you listen to the Church Media Podcast and get the first month free. Learn more at tvapp.church. That's tvapp.church.
Catch up on all episodes of our three-part series with Andrew at thechurchmediapodcast.com. Be sure to pick up Andrew's book today. We link to it in the show notes page on our site. So for all show notes, transcripts, and more resources for your team, you can visit thechurchmediapodcast.com/136. That's in episode number 136. That's thechurchmediapodcast.com/136.
On the next Church Media Podcast.
Next week on the show, I welcome back my friend Ben Stapley from Liquid Church. Ben and I will be talking about how to maximize your message content. Transforming your worship experience involves a lot of things, and you can serve your pastor by giving him the most mileage out of his sermons.
We'll give you some practical tips on how to do that next week. Our podcast is a production of the Ministry of 1230 Media. The producer of our show is the incomparable David Michael Hyde. And thank you for listening this week. Go out there, guys, and create some incredible experiences this weekend. I'll catch you next week.
Thanks for listening to the Church Media Podcast.
Please take a minute today to rate and review the show in iTunes.
For show notes, archive episodes, and more free resources for your team, visit thechurchmediapodcast.com. We'll catch you right here next week for another episode of the Church Media Podcast.